All right, you're ready, Commissioner.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Yuri and I have to double-check the date today. Today is December 16th. All right. All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting for an informal today on case number PU 14-105. It is approximately 1:30 on December 16th. We've got a variety of folks here on the table. Before I guess comments, what I'd like to do is just let's go around the table and identify everybody who's here. Start with Commissioner Crisman.
Randy Crisman, Public Service Commissioner, and good afternoon, everybody.
And then Julie?
Julie Fedorchak, Public Service Commissioner.
And Brian, if you could identify who you're with today and who's on the phone.
Brian Biello with Crowley Fleck Law Firm, representing Sunflower Wind Project, LLC, in this matter.
Are you joining by anybody on the phone, Brian, or just...
Commissioner, we have Casey Willis on the phone with us.
Hi, this is Casey Willis with the Sunflower Wind Project.
All right, thank you, Casey.
And Ryan Norrell, representing the Public Service Commission, and I will be joined shortly by Jerry Lean, Public Utility Analyst of the Public Service Commission.
Okay, thank you, Ryan. All right, thank you, everyone. And just, I guess, a little background on this. The Commission issued a Certificate of Site Compatibility in June 25th of this year, and since then there have been some changes to the project. And so what we've done is the Commission put this out that anyone requesting a formal hearing has until December 18th to do so. If not, we can make a decision without a formal hearing. We also have scheduled an informal today, of course, being December 16th. So if there's not a request for a formal hearing, our discussion today will certainly be what we'll make our decision on. If there is a request for a formal hearing, then we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But right now, from my viewpoint, I think everything certainly appears to be in order. I've read through the paperwork, and I don't have any particular opening comments before I turn it over to Brian, but I'll see if my colleagues do.
I don't have opening comments.
I don't have them either.
Okay. Go ahead, Brian. Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner. I do have extra copies of our filing from October, if anyone would like it.
October 15th?
Yes. Okay. At this time, I'm going to introduce Casey Willis, who, if you may recall, was our principal witness at the hearing on this matter back when we met in Beulah a few months ago. And Casey, you're on the line still?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Casey, if you'd please explain again your reasoning for requesting this possible turbine change.
Yeah, what happens with this particular project, obviously, when we filed our application initially for the Sunflower Wind Project, that was in January of 2014, and it was based on two different layouts, the GE 1.85 87 layout, and then the Vestas V110. At that time, those were the two most viable options, the most competitive turbines for this particular project that we were focused on. In that time, that we're actually requesting is not to replace these three, but to add another one to the running, namely the Vestas V100. And the reason for that is, what happens in the wind industry and the reason that there's a lot of fluctuation and change in turbine models and locations is there are constant changes and innovations to the technology. There are pricing changes, whether they be increases or decreases, that at the end of the day, we're trying to build the project that has the least cost of energy. So that comes into play. For this particular project, there's also issues with availability, turbine availability. Obviously, the vendors, they have a set production schedule, and they can't really increase the capacity beyond the limits. So in certain instances, the vendors can sell out of particularly competitive turbines, or that those turbines are not available during delivery windows for a particular project. So that definitely comes into play as well. There's a variety of other factors that often come into play as well, but those are kind of the three primary reasons for it.
Okay. And, Casey, in the submittal that was made to the Commission on October 16, there's two maps. Could you just briefly explain those?
Yeah, sure. So the two maps are basically – give me 1 second, so I'm looking at the same thing. So the two maps what I wanted to do is basically give the Commission and, other interested parties kind of an idea of, the locations that were previously approved for the V110 and the GE 185. Those are noted in black on the first map. And then the second is the V100 locations that we're requesting now. It's basically within the same boundaries that were previously approved. It's all on the same land that was previously authorized, and generally the locations are pretty close to one another. The reasons for the differences in the locations falls basically within the fact that the rotor dimensions on the V100 are different than the previous two. That weighs into how you have to space the turbines from one another to reduce wake effects. It's a function of just it's a function of decreasing the wake effects, but also spacing so that you're reducing the line cost to the greatest degree possible. So that's basically what this first map shows, is why those where those locations are. The second map shows just the V100 locations and the archaeological survey corridors that were completed up until it would have been June of this year. So it shows the areas where there was overlap and the areas where we needed to augment those surveys based on areas that were not previously inventoried.
Okay. And then I guess that would, the next, what is the status then of those environmental surveys?
Because of the timing and the way the archaeological surveys require there to be clear ground cover so the archaeologists can see the ground and see if there's anything that piques their interest. So because of that, and when we started these surveys, was roughly in October, we strategized with Beaver Creek Archaeology to have them survey the areas that were more prone to have arc sites, namely the areas that were untilled. So we want, just in the interest of wanting to avoid weather or conflicts related to that, they surveyed those areas that were likely to where there could be the possibility they could run into arc sites first, and with tilled areas basically being the last areas that they would survey. In November there was a bit of early snow, or typical snow, I should say, and that. They were not able to complete all of the surveys that we needed to do. They surveyed roughly 70%, with the remaining 30% all being within tilled ag areas where they're highly unlikely to find additional arc sites. But nonetheless, we're going to complete that as soon as we can when the weather cooperates.
Okay, and so as far as SHPO, too, then that'll have to be a subsequent submittal to SHPO as well?
Certainly, and you know, we have, I believe, two previous letters from them. I don't anticipate us finding anything of significance. Basically, we kind of expect to have isolated finds similar to what we found already, and we avoid them as we've already agreed to.
Okay. And part of the submittal on your letter of the 15th was a shadow flicker analysis. Could you just summarize that?
The shadow flickers basically to update what the PSC has seen before in our previous submittals based on the new locations, and that we had that completed by Tetra Tech along with the updated noise study as well.
And what were the results of those?
The results of the noise study in particular, it was consistent with, I believe it's the 50 dBA state regs. And the shadow flicker was consistent with the exposure analysis that was previously identified in our original findings. Pretty limited areas of hourly exposure over the course of the year.
So, like with respect to the shadow, the shadow flicker, there were no exceedances noted?
There is not a threshold for shadow flicker.
Okay.
But I believe the highest area, I'm looking that up right now, is 36 hours in a given year.
Okay. So relatively low.
Yes.
And the acoustic analysis, what were the results? They were all below the 50 dBA at any of the receptor sites, is that correct?
That is correct.
And so when do you anticipate getting in those final surveys?
The archaeological surveys, the folks from Beaver Creek are actually going to try to get out there on Sunday, this past Sunday and Monday, given that there was a slight warming trend. I have not been able to connect with them to see if they were able to do that, but we're, you know, obviously we'll have that completed prior to any disturbance in those areas associated with construction, and obviously have SHPO concurrence as well. In terms of timing, it's basically when the weather cooperates.
And with respect to actual construction, what are your plans there?
We actually notified the PSC yesterday. So right at this point, let me back up a little bit. So the production tax credit, which I know that you folks are all very familiar with, it's been proposed to have a one-year extension, and that is presently in the Senate and awaiting approval or a vote on that. If it goes forward and is approved, what will happen is very similar to what occurred with the last extension. There will be a one-year extension to the production tax credit. To qualify for that, it requires projects to – there's a couple different ways to qualify it, through ordering or procurement of turbines, roughly 5% down, starting construction, physical construction of a significant nature – and that's what we're proposing to do. Sort of kind of an arbitrary standard, but the requirements according to the advisors that we have that work closely with the IRS is that we need to start construction of at least 1,000 feet of road in order to meet the IRS guidance. It's pretty arbitrary, but that's the guidance that we have. So our notification to the PSC that occurred yesterday was that we were going to start construction on roads that are approved and authorized for the two turbine models that have already been approved in June. It's a short segment of road, roughly a mile long, that basically could be used by any of the two approved locations or the pending V100 locations. After that's completed, we'll cease construction until the spring, where at that point we'll move forward with full construction for the project.
A quick question there, Casey. I was under the impression at the hearing that you guys had already secured and locked in the PTC for this project.
We had. That's correct. That's absolutely correct. That was the previous, the last version of the PTC that was authorized. Our methodology was to procure equipment. We actually procured transformers for the project. So in this go-around, what we're basically doing is kind of a belt and suspenders approach. So to continue our ability to maintain the qualification for the tax credit, we've been advised that it would benefit us by starting some limited construction.
But
and that's unless the, hence the fact that the road.
Okay. I haven't been following that real closely, just a little bit. But I guess I assumed that all the projects that had already qualified were already in. But you're saying that that's kind of unclear and you're just being doubly safe?
No, basically what it is the last go around, the production tax credit required projects to be in construction at the end of 2013. If you were to do that and qualify it, as long as the project was operational by the end of 2015, it could qualify. So what's occurring right now is we're in a circumstance where the PTZ has already expired. There's been a push in Congress to do a limited extension of 1 year. So all that this would do is basically it's an extension of what was basically authorized a year ago, so that projects that are in construction at the end of 2014 could still qualify into 2016. So it's just a one-year extension of the program.
So by qualifying under the new extension, if it passes, you'd have until the end of 2016 to be operational?
That's correct.
I see. Okay, thank you.
And then, Casey, I guess to summarize it, your request that the commission approve this V100 turbine array subject to, of course, submittal of those final survey reports and proving there's no significant sites?
Yes, that would be our request.
I don't have any further questions for Casey.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Maybe I'll see if Mr. Norrell or Jerry have questions, and I'll move over to the commissioners.
Thank you, Commissioner. Casey, this is Ryan Norrell. I do have some questions for you about the just a few things here. I think Jerry Lean had talked to you about the FONSI and the SHPO concurrences on the new proposed locations. Can you give us a status on that?
Sure, yes. I think if you all recall, we had a federal nexus on this project because we were interconnecting into a Western Area Power Authority line. We completed, or I should say Western completed, the final environmental assessment and issued their decision document, which is a finding of no significant impact, or FONSI, in October. So that is now complete.
And the new proposed locations won't have any impact on that FONSI?
No, it's all there. The V100 array was actually accounted for in our EA with Western, and it's a kind of a broad document, so there it doesn't get into siting specifics about individual locations, but it is consistent with what was analyzed in the EA.
Okay. Is it common to have three options for turbines in these type of projects, or is it more common to have two?
To be honest with you, our business development people are probably analyzing on any project about 6 to 8 turbines. Just it's a function of the top three vendors in the industry right now are the ones that have been doing it the longest and have the greatest track record. So it'd be Vestas, Siemens, and GE. But there are others that are out there that are improving their technologies. So at the end of the day, we're always evaluating on any project, not just this one, but on what is going to, you know, generate the least cost of energy. So we're constantly evaluating new models that come in all the time.
So is it possible in the future, if there's another one that based on modeling would generate it with the least cost of energy, that we could see another proposal for a different option here?
It is possible.
Have you guys used any of these, any of the three models that have been proposed here in the past and past projects?
We have used, so on the GE platform, we've used, it was a 1.7-100 on a Texas project. The 1.85 that we have approved is kind of it's a variation or takeoff of that model. And then we have not used the Vestas 100 or the V110. Those are relatively new. Those came on the market within the past 12 months, I believe. But for those models, it's not a completely new turbine. It's kind of an improvement of older models that Vestas has used and improved and kind of improved the efficiency and increased the rotor size. So it's not a brand new technology, per se.
Okay. One of the questions I remember asking at the hearing was just simply, who will and when will the decision be made as to which final turbine you choose?
It's done in conjunction with project financing. We're still kind of evaluating and figuring out our financing to pay for the whole project itself. So as a part of that process, I mean, it'll be done. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it needs to be done a couple months before construction can obviously commence, because there are final engineering that it needs to be completed for the foundations, and those are very turbine dependent. So it's not something that can be delayed to the very last second by any means.
Sure. I have a couple questions just about the maps that were submitted on October 15th. I'm looking at the first of those two maps. It up in kind of the northeast corner of the project in section 23, there are, it looks to me, about four turbines, numbers 50, A09, A10, and A11, which were not previous options, whether it's the GE or the Vestas 110, were not modeled up in that area or predicted or proposed in that area, I guess. I'm wondering, are any of those four turbines close to a residence? And that's my first question there.
They are. So those three are all alternatives in this particular array. They're all on signed land. They're all at least 1,400 feet away from the closest adjacent residence. I don't have the exact distance on me, though. I believe it's 1,500 feet to the closest participant, which is just to the south.
Okay.
And I don't have the non-occupied right at my hand. Let me see. I believe it's actually specified in the noise study, or it shows it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there isn't a non-participating landowner anywhere close to there, but okay. There is a participating landowner just to the south.
Okay. That was the follow-up question, too. On the acoustics study that was submitted, on page 7, it's got receptors 1, 3, 4, 5, and 6, although they're not over 50. In particular, 1, 3, and 6 are at 46 decibels, and that's getting close to 50. Are those close to participating landowners?
So... 1, 3, and 6. So you're noting that in this, that it's showing the predicted at these locations is 41 decibels, 46 decibels. And what was the last residence you made reference? Was it 6?
6, yep, that's 46 as well.
So 1, 5, and 6. I believe all 1...
1, 3, and for that matter, 4 and 5 as well as 6. Are all over 40.
So 1 and 3 are participating, as is 2.
Do you know if 4, 5, and 6 are participating?
I believe they're non-participating landowners.
This is Julie just interjecting here. I'm looking at your map on page figure 2. I wasn't sure that the numbers on this table really actually correlated with the numbers on the map for the receptors, because some of those receptors are, like 6 on the map is way outside, it's outside the boundary of the project.
Yeah, that's a good, so I honestly had not noticed that one.
Well, and it's outside of the, I mean, it's in the, it's not even really mapped in the sound area, you know, either. So it seemed like those receptors listed in the table don't correlate to the receptors in the map. But that might be something we should have a good answer to. What are those receptors in that table, and where are they located?
Yeah, I can double-check that. I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head, other than I believe the maps are correct. It could be that the tables are sorted incorrectly, but I can clarify that.
Can we get,
see what I'm saying? Right?
Yeah, yep, I see that. Yeah, it doesn't make sense that according to the map, number 6 would be 46 decibels based right. off of what the map
yeah.
is showing. Can we get some clarification, follow-up on that, Casey, in the near future?
We could do a
late
absolutely. File
exhibit. I'll do that.
You sure. want to do that?
That'd be great.
I can do that straight after this call, and I'll provide that through Brian.
Okay, thank you. And then my other question, I guess, that I've got is on the shadow flicker. There are some, differences between, as you would expect, and I'm looking at page 5 of what was filed most recently on the shadow flicker. Revised November 2014. Pages 5 and 6, tables 1, 2, and 3. 1 and 2 show what has already been approved by the PSC. Table 3 shows the Vestas V100. For example, receptor ID number 1 is down in time, shadow hours per year. However, number two is significantly higher than what's proposed under tables one and table two. On table three, receptor ID 2 is about 18 minutes higher. Do you know if receptor ID 2, is that a participant as well?
Yeah, it's the same. So you brought up before the three alternatives that stretch up into the northeast.
Sure, yep.
That's what's causing the increase on 2. If you actually look at figure 2C, you can see why that is. You can see those three alternates that stretch up. That's why there's an increase compared to the other two.
Okay. Sure. Okay. That makes sense. All right. I don't think I have any further questions. I'll see if Mr. Lean has any.
No questions for me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Jerry. Casey, this is Brian here. I just have a couple questions. I remember the hearing, and it was a pretty clean hearing from what I thought, and I really didn't have many concerns, and henceforth we move forward with it. But the changes now, just to summarize, the wind shear, if you will, is a little different. It's still the same number of megawatts, but that's going to cause you to change the base location, which means you still have work out there with the SHPO. Is that overly simplified, or is that kind of lay it out there?
No, I think that's right. I think to start with, so the V100 obviously is a smaller rotor compared to the V110, and that affects, you know, the spacing differences. And frankly, what I had our folks do is add as many potential alternatives as possible. That's largely why we have that stretch up into the northeast. We have roughly 12 alternatives in here. So I was trying to capture everything we could potentially feasibly use to try to limit the potential for us to have to come back and request, you know, another approval for, say.
So how do you, tell me, in the SHPO, you can't expect them to make a decision until you get them all the information. So our first order was contingent upon that, so I imagine if we would do this again, it would be the same thing. But give me your best guess, a little more clarity, when you think you might give SHPO the information they need to make a decision.
If I could guess, if we're able to get a period of time, you know, where there's as little snow on the ground as possible, we're going to complete the ARC surveys and immediately submit it to SHPO. If that becomes problematic, then I would anticipate that it'll, you know, we'll wait till spring melt, and as soon as we're able to get out there, we will complete those surveys and submit to SHPO for concurrence. But given that we're using an identical scope of work, the same minimization measures that we've proposed previously, kind of our expectation is that they would turn around a response in about a week, which is pretty consistent with what they did the last couple times.
I'm just thinking ahead a little bit. If this ends up being potentially a spring construction, you know, the road issues that come into play with soft roads in the spring, and I mean, there's a whole new set of challenges that will come if you try to do a spring construction. So that's just kind of a FYI thought. The last one, case, is just more of a me trying to, I guess, a little frustration here, where you're telling me today that you're not even sure this is the turbine you're going to approve, so why should I even move in this order? Until you tell me you're going to pick the right turbine.
This is our best guess, and that's why, that's why we're adding it rather than taking one off the table. I mean, the lead time for us to get an approval, it is a couple months. This is something that would be required through financing. So if we didn't have this approval, it's a big red flag from a financing standpoint.
Right, but it's for me personally, it's very hard for me to approve a project that you're telling me may not even be built. I mean, can you at least give me some certainty that the base locations that you have studied and are studying will be the same if you do change the turbines?
I can't guarantee that. If it was a different rotor or dimension that we would eventually use, it is the possibility that we'd have to alter some of these. It would be consistent with the differences, you know, in the maps that we submitted.
Well, and Casey, I appreciate you're being frank with us, saying that there's always a possibility of changes. But when you think of, you know, what is the chances that you're going to, I know these are just numbers that you're just kind of have to give me your best gut feel, but you've been doing this for a while. I mean, what percentage of certainty do you think that you're going to use the turbines that are in front of us today? Are we talking, you know, 20%, 50%, at least 75%? What do you think is the likelihood of you using what's in front of us today?
I'd tell you that it's anywhere from 50 to 75%.
And when would you know if it changes again?
If we're going to do a spring construction here, we would need to know in the next 2 or 3 months if there was a possibility that we were going to shift.
Because, you know, it would be the same scenario with the SHPO again, where if you come back to us 2 months from now and say you're going to change version Y now is going to be the new turbine, well, then there'll be a new location, and the SHPO is going to have to study it again. So it just goes round and around, is I guess what I'm saying, is I think you're walking yourself into a box here.
It's not necessarily that complex with SHPO, frankly. I think what they're doing is they're ensuring that the protocol and the methodology that's been used by the ARC survey is adequate, and it avoids any sites of interest. And that's basically what they're looking for. So it's a fairly streamlined process for us to at least. It's just a function of, you know, if we had another revision hypothetically or a change in a road location, we would use the same approach as we did before. We would look at what we surveyed to date, which is around 1,400 acres out here, and identify those areas where if there isn't a proposed disturbance in an area that hasn't surveyed, then we'd send the folks back out to resurvey those locations.
Okay, thank you, Casey. I don't want you to take the wrong message. I mean, as I said the first time, I thought it was a pretty good hearing. You laid things out. The scenario of us potentially approving something that we don't have a lot of likelihood that it may not be the right final location, that's an interesting scenario we haven't seen before. So that's all I have, Casey. Thank you. I'll see if Commissioner Crispin has any, and then Commissioner Fedorchak.
Good afternoon, Casey. This is Randy. My first questions here deal with those four turbine sites in the northeast corner, A11, A10, A9, and 50. Those are all four new locations from when we did the Vestas 110s and the GEs, correct?
Yes, that is true.
And so the three that start with the letter A, that means those are alternates in this plan as opposed to alternatives from the previous plans, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. What was didn't Morton County have a longer setback than some of the other counties, or am I thinking of a project that we did down by Hettinger?
Nope, you have that right. It's actually reversed, though. It's Stark County had the more restrictive requirements. Okay. But Morton has, and it came down to the setback from non-participating landowners, I believe. Doing this off of memory, but I think Stark was 2,000 feet, and Morton had 1,320.
And this yellow line toward the west side of your project, that's the Morton and Stark County line, right? So these four are in Morton County.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, so on these four, I'll just, you know, be right up front with what my concern is. I don't know if that landowner that's down in the kind of the southeast corner of that section, I don't know if that person just lives there or if that person also owns most of that section and operates it. But I really worry that while they're listed on here as a participating landowner, they may have been willing to participate and liked this whole plan as long as they didn't have turbines in the middle of their field. And knowing that we were out and did a hearing and everything, and they looked at it at the time, and they assume that that's the case now, and we wouldn't bait and switch them. And so I don't know that between that landowner and, if it's a different person, the ones who operate that farmland, I don't know if they're really aware of this. And so what have you done since October to make sure that those people are really aware of the changes?
So a couple things. The first off is that the gentleman that lives just to the south, he does live there permanently. The turbines, number 50 and A09, are on his land, so there would be a direct benefit. The turbines on A10 and A11 are his nephew. So when we proposed this new V100 layout, Jerry had contacted me and requested that we send out a letter to all of our landowners and certify, just notifying them of what we're doing and why. And it's basically what's explained. What we submitted to our landowners is not identical, but very similar to what we submitted to the PSC, where we're requesting a third array, and we included a map describing that and why. So they are aware of it.
And that was a certified letter, so you can prove that they got it.
That's correct.
And that includes... Okay, you said that the person who lives there owns the land for 50 and A9, but A10 and A11 are a relative, correct?
I believe that's my understanding from talking to one of our land agents.
Do you know then that relative that owns that land with A10 and A11, is that an absent landowner, or is that the person that farms it? Because according to a map in the original application, that is right in the middle of prime farmland.
Yeah, that gentleman farms it.
Okay, and so do you just have that, whatever you get when you send out a certified letter that shows they have it, or do we have that in our record?
Is that a question for me, or is that for Jerry?
They have not been filed.
Okay. But it would always be available.
Yes.
I don't have any other questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak.
Yeah, Casey, just a clarification here. I think I've discovered the discrepancy with the acoustic modeling table. But if you look at that table, which is A1 on the November 10th filing, and then you look at figure 2, just a few pages back, or figure 1 for that matter, either of those. And then go down to, they're in the Flickr study maps, figure 1 of the receptor locations modeled with WinPro to predict expected shadow flicker impacts. So if you look at the maps for the sound versus the flicker study, basically, it looks like the sound maps, there's receptors close to number 6, or there's towers close to tower locations close to number 6 that aren't on here. Are you able to follow all that?
Not quite.
Do you have all these in front of you?
Yeah, I'm looking at them all right now. This is something that Tetra Tech obviously produced on our behalf. So I think
what I'm seeing on tape on Figure 1 in the Flickr study is that there are turbine locations close to that occupied residence number 6, which on the tabulated acoustic modeling results is the receptor that has the closest, the highest sound level. So if this table is accurate, then the sound tables are missing some receptors. Are you following?
So you're saying near 6.
You just have to look at figure 2 and figure 1 of the figure 2 of the sound study and figure 1 of the Flickr study, and you can see that there's these towers are not on here. See, look here. They're not on there like they are here.
I'll have to double check that.
Figure two. That's the flicker. This is a sound. It's a separate study. Yeah. So, anyway, clearly, though, even with that, the table on the sound study shows that that is, it looks like those towers were probably modeled, because that would explain why that receptor 6, if it does correlate to their same receptors as the map, would have such a high, the highest sound level. So if you can just clarify again.
I think
those
you're
receptors.
Right. I see what you're, if I can, and I will confirm all those, I don't want to speculate, but I think what's happening is those ones that you're noting that are closer to 6, I believe those are going to be leftover locations from one of our previous filing that they left in the model. That's what it looks like, but I'll confirm that.
Okay. So they probably aren't being actively considered right now? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and and if you look at our figure 1 from the filing that we submitted with our, that shows the comparison of what was previously approved compared to the V100 locations that are red dots.
Uh-huh.
You can kind of see what I'm talking about, that we don't have any V100 locations that stretch in that section 32 and section 5 on the southern extent. That's so
okay.
Does that make sense? So I think that those are leftover remnants from the model that I didn't notice before, and I'll clarify that.
Okay. All right. Then if I am looking correctly at that flicker study map, which is figure 1 of that shadow flicker impact analysis, that has all of the turbine locations for all three models and alternative locations and occupied and unoccupied residences all in one map. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. And all of the residences inside the project are participating?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. All right, Casey, I don't have any other questions.
Commissioner Crisman had some follow-ups.
I do, Casey. Two things. First of all, I wanted to express it before and forgot, but I appreciate that you made the effort to send out certified letters to these landowners with the change. I just think it's important that they realize that there's changes coming, even though we had a hearing quite a while ago. But did that letter point out to them that they had an opportunity to request a hearing and that the deadline was, 2 days from now?
I believe it did. I believe I noted that because I think Jerry asked me to put that in there. Let me double check that right now.
Casey, was the notice attached to that? Sorry, Commissioner. Just
give me 1 second. Let me double check this. Sorry about this. 1 second. Yeah, so our letter, it just indicated that we, what we had approved and that what we were submitting in terms of the revised V100 layout. And the purpose of it was to request greater flexibility in the selection of the project's wind turbine model for design and competitiveness.
So they're kind of left on their own to presume that they could request a hearing or have more say in it.
I guess so, yeah. I guess so.
Okay, thank you.
Casey Bryan here again. The this is for staff, too. This was published, though, in the local papers, correct? So it's not like there wasn't, I get Commissioner Crispin's point, there wasn't a direct notification, but we have verified it was published in all the correct papers.
Yes.
Casey, I just have one follow-up back to what I was kind of harping on before. Okay, I believe I understand what you're telling me, that even though you're not 100% certain on this turbine, you'd like the certainty that this turbine, that this location, this layout is approved, so you can go talk to your financing people, if you will. But what's better about an updated order that is a turbine you still don't, might not use, and the order you already have? You already have an approved order. I'm trying to figure out what would be the...
Yeah, but it doesn't have one of the primary candidates that we would potentially use, that being the V100. At the end of the day, because the PSC's order is a discretionary order, you know, bankers are obviously very conservative, so you either have it or you don't. And,
But you have an order now that says we approve it, and... I understand your point, though. If you're certain you're going to use this next turbine, but do you go tell the financing people we might not even be using that turbine too? So the PSC has approved.
No, we would go down the path with the finance folks in parallel. Like, if our V100 turbine is the lead candidate or what would generate the least cost of energy, all of the financing would be based on: do you have the authorization to do this? You know, do you have the engineering and feasibility studies completed? What are the wind assessments? If you're missing elements of that, it becomes a huge financing risk.
Well, and what I'm trying to figure out is, and this is more of the industry right now, is I believe I understand the position the industry is in, where you're going to want to negotiate right up till the very end to get the best deal you can for the turbines. I get that. I would do the same thing. But if there's something we can put in our orders and our siting that gives you an array of places you can previously approve, so depending what turbine you actually select, we've already done the environmental review and the SHPO review. I mean, that would be a win-win for everyone. I wish there was. Do you have any thoughts on how we could do that? Maybe if you asked the SHPO in this concurrence to look at a larger area. I mean, there must be a.
I can explain how other states have handled this issue. I've learned a lot by going through this project, you know, in the way that North Dakota, the PSC, has handled this. I think in hindsight, if I could start Sunflower over, what I would probably do is go back to our design folks and say, hey, look, let's look at six models that we could potentially use on this project,
right?
You know, and propose them all. I mean, within the current process that the PSC utilizes, my understanding is that that might work. It might be convoluted from the public standpoint, but we would have all of our environmental analysis based on that.
So I don't think, Casey, that's convoluted. I think that's, if you go into the public and you say, we're going to build a wind farm, and here's a potential array of turbines, here's the potential area they could go into, then we could do the environmental review and all the road review. And right now there's not an unlimited amount of turbines you're going to select from. It may not be this one, but maybe if you have it narrowed down to two, we should be considering both of those turbines right now, and not instead of just one of them. We may come back here again 2 months from now.
Yeah, the way other states have handled this, and I'll kind of explain it, it's sort of what they do is they analyze, I'm going to call it a Franken turbine. It's kind of what's the biggest, what's the tallest, you know, where are the approved corridors that you would like to place this. So all of the environmental analysis, it's not necessarily on a specific turbine model, it's based on, you know, the tallest turbine, the loudest turbine. So that way you're capturing a worst-case evaluation of every possibility that could be considered. So, for instance, Oregon, they look at, you know, I believe it's 500-foot-wide corridors, and you're basically stating, you know, these are the half-dozen turbines that we could potentially use. This is the loudest. This is the tallest. And as long as the final turbine model fits within the analysis that was completed, that's approved and authorized. So it kind of provides the flexibility that, you know, we need to not waste everybody's time by having to come forward with a new approval. But it also captures kind of full disclosure to the public, especially from a worst-case standpoint.
Well, and Jerry Lynn's got some thoughts, but, I mean, that's exactly what I'm thinking is I'm not, for me personally, I've never thought that we had to put down that it's the Vestas 1.2. We would just say we've approved a wind turbine. It no matter what it is, it stays below this threshold of noise. No matter what it is, it's this far back. So we give you the flexibility of what turbine you want. We do have to do to make sure that where the base of the turbine at has the environmental review. But maybe this is the time we start looking at that a little bit. So Jerry Lean's got some thoughts from staff.
Yeah, for the Courtenay project, we did just that. They found a Franken turbine, as Casey calls them, and they set their site plan up to accommodate that, all the setbacks and everything for this huge turbine, loudest thing they could think of, biggest shadow flicker, and they did shadow flicker studies on the entire project for all the alternates as if there was a turbine everywhere. And when they put together that site plan then, the turbines were far enough apart so that if they used a smaller turbine, it would have less wake and the site plan would still work. So in this case, we're using different site plans with different turbine locations. So they get to conserve a little bit of lines for collector lines and so forth because the positions might be a little closer together for the smaller turbines. And so this is kind of a more optimal layout for the project costs according to whatever turbine they have. But when we're changing turbine locations with every turbine, then we're kind of forced to approve different locations. If we could just approve one location for the whole field and then they select the turbines that go in that one location, then we'd be fine. And that's the way we've done it in Courtenay. And so now when they select their turbine, all they got to do is tell us what it is.
Well, Casey, I'll put that back to you and send our staff and work out your proposed order and all that. But just giving you my thoughts of if there's a way that we could do this that gives you flexibility while still ensuring all the components are there, I'd certainly be open to that. So, any Commissioner Crisp, anything else?
Well, on that subject, I'm not so sure I'm sold the same way you are on a change in strategies for citing these. And I need to think about it. I see some positive points to it. But I also, you know, if you're going to come in and have 6 or 8 or 10 different alternatives all blended into one big proposal, I see the potential for, you know, building maybe a false sense of exuberance among some landowners who don't live there and would obviously like the money when they don't have to look at them. And so, you know, we do too many alternatives, it looks like it's going to hit a lot more places. It would also possibly build up some false opposition from someone who's opposed to one that shows up on there that likely never will be the case. I guess I'm frustrated with the way the industry has kind of evolved, that all this regulatory work has to be done in advance, and all these options are left till the last minute. You know, we wouldn't think of siting a power line, and you know, while you just wait and see what kind of poles you get the best deal on and things like that, and you can always move it over another mile later if you want to. You know, just nothing else seems to work this way except for this wind farm industry, but that's not Casey's fault or you know, the fault of this company or anything. But so I just want to point out, I'm not sure that I like to the idea of blending a whole bunch of them into one proposal either.
Fair enough. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Well, I don't have any more questions on this case. I've been concerned about these changes in locations, but I've also been sitting here kind of surprised that every time we've done it, we haven't really heard back from anybody. So that tells me either they don't care that much, they aren't hearing about it, or the companies are doing a fairly decent job on the front end explaining to folks that these locations may change, and the people realize that. So
And I can guarantee that because, I mean, and I can almost guarantee that for the industry as a whole because this is not, this is a very common thing. We don't want to give anybody the false sense of, you know, security that they're going to get X number of turbines and then, you know, because of final design, one location that we thought would work isn't going to and it turns out to be less or, you know, just we don't want to cause bad sentiment between neighbors. So that is a very upfront thing that all of the landowners know, that it's just we don't make any promises. And unfortunately, it's just the way that it works. And it's frustrating for me to have to do this and to come back forward and request for further authorizations. It's just kind of the, you know, mm-hmm. way the industry works, unfortunately, I guess. It's the best way to describe it. But from the landowner standpoint, yeah, they're fully informed that these changes occur all the time.
Well, to that end, Casey, that seems to be bearing out in our in experience, at least this is, I think, the third time we've done this now in the last few months. But I would embrace us doing a separate work session on some site of a, some discussion about how to streamline this, if there's a better way to have this siting process so it is less specific, a little bit broader, and can be more adaptable to the companies as they move through the development process and the decision-making on which turbines to use. So.
Thank you, Julie. Randy had one more thought.
This isn't so much about the case specifically, but generally, Casey, is there some kind of a limiting fact? Do you have to use all the same turbines other than wanting to get to order in volume and get a deal? Or if you chose to, could you use half of these Vestas 100s and half of them Vestas 110s?
In concept, you could do that, but because they're different turbine models, it makes the operation and maintenance costs a lot more expensive because you're having to supply parts for two different models that can't necessarily be used. So typically, you don't see that. Under unusual circumstances, you may see two different models at a particular site, but generally, you have one model at one site. It just simplifies things a lot.
Okay, thank you.
And before I forget, Brian Biela, would you offer up yours and Casey's as your official testimony for this, informal?
Yes, Your Honor.
And we'd be happy to receive it. Okay, the whatever it takes.
Your Honor,
right?
You just got promoted.
2 weeks ago, right?
Just to have it right in front.
Brian, anything?
I do have a couple clarifying questions. I'm sorry. Casey, you had said that a map was mailed to the landowners with the letter informing them of the change, and I just wanted to clarify, did that map include the proposed sites?
Yeah, I got to double check this because I said that, and I'm looking back. I believe it included actually the map that showed the comparison between, I'm not at my office right now, but it showed the same map that the PSC received that showed the proposed V100 locations and the locations that were already approved.
Okay, that was my next question. Then the final one that I have is kind of piggybacking on Commissioner Chrisman's questions about the larger setbacks in Stark County. Alternative Site 1, A01, up in the northwest, or the more so the west side of the project in Section 24, and also Site 23 up in down in Section 36 on the Stark County side of the line. Are there any setback concerns with either of those two sites because they look like they are new compared to what was originally proposed?
Can you say the two numbers again?
Sure, A01 and number 23.
No. I mean, all of these factors in that 2,000-foot setback, that was done well in advance, so there's no conflict with those requirements in Stark County.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have for questions.
Okay. Going once, going twice, or anyone at all at the table?
Just one question. Did we get a clarification on Julie's map issue then? Are we getting something filed that's
I think.
Final?
Casey, you were going to double check and get back on that.
Say that one more time. I couldn't hear it. There's kind of a loud beeping noise.
We had a discrepancy in the maps between the sound shadow flicker map and between the sound and shadow flicker maps.
Yeah.
So
yes, I can provide a follow up to that.
Okay.
We're going to do a late filed exhibit on that.
Yeah. Correct. A late filed exhibit will be filed.
Okay, I guess what I would like to do is tomorrow we have a commission meeting, so we'll add this to scheduling. If you could remind me, Jerry, for a work session on this quickly, and then we'll, the sooner you get us all the information, but I think a work session with the three of us, whether we have all the information or not, it's going to bear some fruit pretty quick. So that's, I guess, what I'd like to think going forward, going once, going twice. We'll close the informal. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeez. We had a lot of people listening.
70 people listening.